That's for SMEs. Okay, Matt.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Hans. Turning now to the 2019 review of the IFRS for SME standard. At this meeting, we are asking the board to agree the approach to whether, and if so, how, the IFRS for SMEs standard should be aligned with full IFRS standards, and if and how the board should proceed with the 2019 comprehensive review of the IFRS for SME standard, the 2019 review. Today we are going to present three papers. Agenda paper 30A, approach to the 2019 comprehensive review of the IFRS for SME standard. In this paper we will discuss the board's possible approaches to whether and if so, how the IFRS for SME standard could be aligned with full IFRS standards. Paper 30B, new IFRS standards, IFRS 16. In this paper, we demonstrate the staff's proposed approach to alignment of the IFRS for SMEs standard with full IFRS standards, including application of the alignment principles. Finally, in Agenda Paper 30C, the way forward, we will discuss how the board could proceed with the 2019 review. Because Paper 30B demonstrates how the alignment principles could be applied, we would like to present Papers 30A and 30B together before addressing the question in Paper 30A. We will then present Agenda Paper 30C after that. So turning first to Agenda Paper 30A. Paragraphs 7 to 21 provide a summary of the discussions at the February and March 2019 board meetings. The 2019 review is currently in phase one, developing a request for information that will provide the board with evidence to enable it to decide if and how to proceed with an exposure draft of amendments to the IFRS for SME standard. That RFI will be the key document for gathering evidence from stakeholders, especially users of financial statements prepared in accordance with the IFRS for SME standard, to decide if and how the board should proceed. At the March 2019 board meeting, some members expressed different views on whether and how to align the IFRS for SME standard with new and amended IFRS standards. So moving on to paragraphs 31. We've categorised the views we heard as view one, the IFRS for SME standard should be aligned with new and amended IFRS standards, and in determining alignment, the board should apply the alignment principles. View two, the IFRS for SME standard should provide a stable platform that is only updated for specific problems brought to the board's attention. Now, the staff acknowledge that there are a continuum of views, and view one and view two are at each end of that continuum. Therefore, board members might not completely identify with view one or view two. Under view one, we propose the IFRS for SME standard should be aligned with full IFRS standards, and in determining alignment, the board should apply the alignment principles that we have previously outlined. Those that may hold this view do so because the needs of the users of the financial statements of SMEs are similar in many ways to the needs of users of financial statements of publicly accountable entities. It also brings efficiency for preparers, auditors, regulators, educators, and users of the financial statements who benefit from a common basis of accounting standards. The staff notes that, as discussed by the board at the March 2019 meeting, Aligning the IFRS for SMEs standard with full IFRS standards does not prevent the board from including requirements that are different from those in full IFRS standards. For example, as is already done with amortisation of goodwill for entities that apply the IFRS for SME standard, or developing requirements for matters not specifically addressed in full IFRS standards, for example, perhaps cryptocurrency. View 2 proposes the IFRS for SMEs should provide a stable platform that is only updated for specific problems brought to the board's attention. Support for this approach focuses on a stable platform in that it minimises disruption and cost of a significant update for entities applying the IFRS for SMEs standard, that the board has not heard significant concerns about the current IFRS for SMEs standard, and that it appears to generally be working well. It minimises costs for jurisdictions who need to translate the standard and related educational materials. It avoids the risk of imposing requirements from IFRS standards that are either not relevant or too complex for entities applying the IFRS for SMEs standard. And it reduces the risk of unintended consequences of making significant changes to the standard. The staff believe, whether you start at view 1 or view 2, it would be possible for the board to develop the same recommendations. To assist the board in considering the issue of alignment, the board instructed the staff to prepare a paper that demonstrates how the alignment principles would be applied when determining whether and how the alignment to align the IFRS for SME standard with new and amended IFRS standards. And on that basis, the staff have prepared paper 30B, which I would ask Yusuf now to present.
Thank you, Matt. As Matt explained, agenda paper 30B demonstrates a structure we would propose using for all the papers that address new and amended IFRS standard at future board meetings. So board members are asked to provide feedback on the approach to whether and how to align the IFRS for SME standard with IFRS 16, including how the staff have applied the alignment principles. Board members are not asked to comment on the technical merits of the proposals in agenda paper 30B. The paper starts with an overview of IFRS 16 leases in paragraphs 5 to 8 of the paper and the IFRS for SMEs section 20 leases in paragraph 9. The paper then demonstrates how the alignment principles can be applied to IFRS 16 in paragraph 12 to 59 of the paper. First, relevance. As outlined in paper 30A, staff recommended that in determining whether and how to align the IFRS for SME standard with new and amended IFRS standard, the board first evaluates whether the problems the IFRS standard seek to address is relevant to entities applying the IFRS for SME standard. This principle assesses whether aligning with new and amended IFRS standards would make a difference to the users of financial statements. When assessing relevance, staff have considered the importance of leasing to SMEs and the benefits of IFRS 16 and how those benefits of IFRS 16 would yield information that is relevant for users of entities applying the IFRS for SME standards. In paragraph 60 to 67 of the paper, staff have also considered stakeholder views when assessing relevance, particularly the feedback we have received from the small and medium-sized entities implementation group, the SMIG. Paragraph 66 of the paper outlined IFRAG's endorsement advice regarding the impact of IFRS 16 to SMEs. Staff would like to clarify that IFRAG paper did not deal with the IFRS for SME standard, but rather to the effects of IFRS 16 on those SMEs that apply full IFRS. Turning to simplicity, the paper is split into two parts. The first part, it identified existing simplifications under IFRS 16, and then it also includes staff conclusion, which conclude that we think that these simplifications should be included in the IFRS for SMEs because it will provide cost relief to those entities applying the IFRS for SME standards. We would seek to consult on these simplifications in the RFI. The paper also identified a list of additional simplifications that staff are proposing. The third and last principle is faithful representation. So what staff has done is staff have looked at all the proposed simplifications and then assess whether this will diminish faithful representation or not. And the conclusion that staff have reached is that these additional proposed simplifications will not diminish faithful representation. Aligning the IFRS for SMEs standard with IFRS 16 after incorporating the additional proposed simplification in this paper will require a lessee to recognize assets and liabilities for the rights and obligations created by leases with limited exceptions. This approach will provide useful information to users of the entity's financial statements and will result in a more faithful representation of a lessee's assets and liabilities than the current Section 20. Staff expects these simplifications will significantly bring down the implementation cost for entities applying the IFRS for SME standard, and the benefit of the change will outweigh the cost of applying it. Furthermore, the RFI will provide more information about the costs and the benefits of the change in order to enable the board to make an informed decision. I would now invite any questions on how staff have applied the alignment principles in paper 30B. If the board decides to continue with the review, we would return to the board with a paper for approval subject to comment.
We, of course, love principles at the ISB, but in one of the small group meetings, we had a rather maddening discussion about these issues, which made me think of the good German expression "Jeder Prinzip führt zum Teufel." That's correct, no? Or
I don't know.
That's a German.
What it means is every principle leads to the devil if you push it too far. And I find the dichotomy between the two views a bit false. First of all, the term IFRS for SMEs, that in itself indicates that there is at least a strong link to IFRS. Otherwise, we should not be using the term IFRS. We will be damaging our own branch. From the beginning, the whole purpose of IFRS for SMEs has been to make it simpler for smaller companies. So I'm also not sure why we need a new discussion about it. This needs to be simple. The second view that it should be a rather stable platform is also something that we have already applied. Because we have not changed the standard in 6 years for this very reason. So it's not either or, it can be both. You can both strive for a strong alignment with IFRS, but at the same time, to keep it simple and stable, you don't change it for every... you don't immediately change it for all the changes that we have done. So what would be a relatively simple way of going forward with this is, first of all, to take stock of all the changes that have been taking place in the last 6 years, make a rough estimate of what is it that these people can handle, that this group of companies can handle, and then look from standard to standard what you have now done with leases. But it could very well be that all the standards can be handled that way, and that then you end up with such a huge change at once that it is difficult to stomach. So at the end of the process, you still have to make an assessment of is this feasible. These principles don't help you very, very much, I'm afraid. So let's take a practical approach. Sue.
I had a few similar reactions. On the view one versus view two, I think it was helpful for effect in terms of, you know, the very distinct ways you could think about it. One, I think view two is sort of start off assuming you should do nothing unless something blindingly obviously needs to be improved. And view one in its starkest form could be do everything that you've done in the big book unless there's some blatant reason why you wouldn't. And I don't think I'm at either of those ends of the spectrum, but I think I'm closer to view one than I am to view two, because I think we do need to think carefully about the reasons for an SME community, if you like, of introducing the changes in the Big Book to explain and bring people along and justify the changes. But I think our sort of starting assumption should be that everything we've done in the Big Book is a candidate to be analysed. So that makes me more at the view one end of the spectrum, I think. It was really helpful for me having 30B to look at in conjunction with 30A because it made it much more tangible for me in terms of what it means. And I think that for me really helped me crystallise why I wasn't at the extreme end of view one, because when I looked at the way that these criteria were applied, I think you probably applied them slightly differently to the way that I would have applied them. So I think the starkest example of where we might be different is, you know, putting it very crudely, you suggested that it was relevant to apply IFRS 16 to SMEs because they enter into lots of leases. And I agree that's obviously an important consideration. But for me, I think we also need to be convinced that given the typical users of SMEs relative to the typical users of IFRS for the Big Book, are they the same population and are there reasons for differences? Because when we were in the last stages of the effects analysis for IFRS 16, I think we started to think that where there were the really big benefits for people, or for users, was for users that weren't so sophisticated that had the greatest risk of being misled by what's on the face of the financial statements. The more sophisticated investors and users already were taking the notes plus conversations with the companies, and they were able to make pretty good estimates of what was on the balance sheet. So they got a benefit of just being able to pick up the number on the face and it's comparable between entities, but the incremental benefit for them was much smaller. I think what we need to look at is whether, if it's the case, and I'm guessing, but if it's the case that most financiers for SMEs are banks who have bilateral relationships with the lenders and who might be relatively sophisticated, is there the same benefit for them that there might have been for the bigger community that we looked at for IFRS 16? Now, the answer to that could be exactly the same as where you got to, but I think our analysis should be looking at what might be different about the user population for SMEs that would cause us to think about it differently. I think another place where we need to think really carefully is the simplification benefits, because I think we say in here that we don't expect, if we simplify the standard, that we don't think the implementation costs would be, you know, insurmountable and definitely wouldn't outweigh the benefits. I think we need to really dig into that and be comfortable about that, because most of the people I've spoken to who've enjoyed the implementation of IFRS 16 say that the biggest cost and effort has been in data gathering. It's not so much working out how to do the accounting, it's the data gathering to make sure you've got all the lease information to pump through the systems. And I can't see... we're going to have that same challenge with SMEs. So let's make sure we understand the benefits and we can assess the costs fully. Now, I didn't necessarily agree with all of the simplifications, but I'm not thinking today's the best time to go through them in all detail. Is that fair?
Yen Chao.
Thank you, yes. Generally, I suppose staff's proposal, I think if we are going to do review of the IFRS for SME, I think view one is the better one. Even we go to adoption view one, it does not mean we will not address the issue of view two, because we are going to address those practical issues as well. And also, because originally, as Hans mentioned, when we develop IFRS for SME, the intention is actually align with IFRS for SME to full IFRS. And so this kind of principle should still be there. And also, I think currently the staff developed three, you know, align principle, I think is very helpful. And alignment does not mean that the standards should be identical or should be same. We still try to assess those requirements in IFRS, for IFRS, whether it's relevant to SME, as you mentioned, from users' perspective, also from cost, from preparer perspective, whether they are relevant, and also whether there's some simplification is needed, and we will also address whether it meets the FESPO representation principle. So when go through this whole process, especially based on the agenda paper 30B, I think it convinced me a lot, because actually we reduce a lot of the complexity of the arising from the adoption of four IFIs, but also achieve the objective of the of our of standards development of standards for SME. So I generally agree with the staff's proposal. We just go to the V1.
Daryl.
So I'm also leaning towards where the staff proposal is, but I like the way Sue articulated it. I think we've got two very absolute views in view one and two, and I think where we're landing is possibly leaning towards one side or the other. And I would also say that I lean towards view A, and I lean to, or view one, and I lean towards that view, because I think what we have through the process of the changes that we've enacted in IFRS, we've got a robust process that has led us to these particular developments, to these particular list of issues that we've raised, if you like, and that we've addressed. We've got some significant outreach, significant work, significant effort that's gone into determining what makes the most sense in that particular market. We've got a lot of logical reasoning about why we thought those changes were appropriate. What that does, I think, is provide us with a very solid starting point. And I think it's the emphasis that that is a starting point. And then I think the exercise that we go through, and your three principles, I would agree with those three principles in the context of that exercise that helps us think about it. The thing that I felt a little bit missing, and this perhaps comes up between the difference of the way you teed up on your side, Matt, and the way you talked about it, Yusuf, in yours, is I think, Yusuf, you mentioned a couple of times the cost element and thinking about the cost and et cetera. And I don't think that's typically the way we would think about relevance, but I think in the context of SMEs, I think that's an important consideration. I would guess that almost anything that is relevant to the user of a IFRS set of financial statements is equally relevant, is also relevant, not necessarily equally relevant, is also relevant to the user of an IFRS for SMEs. But what may change in the move between the two different types of entities is the cost-benefit analysis. And you may well decide that something that has that scores a positive on cost benefit at the IFRS level doesn't at the IFRS for SMEs. And so I think you've considered it in the paper 30B, but I think it's worth just bearing that in mind as we go into the other papers. But in general, I'd also say, as I said, I wouldn't say view one is the answer. I think it is an element starting with view one and then considering where we change. And I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that we need to get some view two points in. Cryptocurrencies is the one you mentioned, Matt. I think the process we use for that is the RFI. That is our outreach process to our constituents. And so as much as we can take some information from SMIG and others, I think primarily what we're going to be doing is asking constituents for what they think from the view two side we need to be thinking about in the IFRS for SME space.
Amaro.
Thanks, sir. At this stage, it will be easier because I will agree with the chairman. Basically, because when I read, I really felt the dichotomy inexistent. Because what we do with IFRS for SMEs, what we did in the last revision to me was V1 plus V2, exactly what we did. So we followed what is actually required in the IFRS for SMEs, but with a view to keep it stable, and with a view to really incorporate only aspects that are important to SMEs. So the paper 30B was really helpful to me on how we could exercise this view of really bringing what is important. And I read paper 30B only with, as you required or asked, only looking at the process. I didn't care about what you are proposing at this stage. And I truly believe we are discussing. The paper was important because of the last discussion, but I think we know what we have to do. We have to look what we've issued, since that is not incorporated, but not creating more problems than necessary for the preparers, and that could provide information users do seek when they assess information from SMEs. And to me, the most important is really access to finance. So banks would ought to be the most benefited by this.
When I look at this, I want to call it an extraordinary, point. And I think that's from two perspectives. One is the amount of change that we've had in IFRS standards in the last several years. And that level of change drove us to, I think for very good reasons, do what Amaro called the blend of one and two last time, which is kind of to lean towards the side of stability. We had very good reasons for saying we wanted more experience with the major standards, et cetera, to emphasize stability. So that's one aspect. And I think that's as far as I can tell, a one-off when these things all come together at the same time. So that maybe requires thinking about how on a one-off basis do we manage that aspect. But I think we're also at a unique point for the SME standard. And that unique point is to decide whether it's going to be more a presumption of stability. You can call it a leaning-to approach, too, or a presumption of alignment. And personally, I'm the alignment, but I would hate for the whole board to convince itself that we should go the alignment route and go through all the work that Paper 30B represents for all the changes that we've made to all the standards and put it out to consult with the world and hear that most of the people who use the SME standards say, that's not what we thought the vision for this project was. And if they came back with that message, I think we'd have to think hard about, Hans, your brand point about it's called the IFRS for SMEs. But I think we have two points that we should do almost a high-level RFI and make sure we and our stakeholders are all on the same page, and that is who is it for, which is the question we've discussed already about the public interest entities as the limit. And the second is size. We're all assuming that SMEs are, as it says on the tin, small. But we don't have a size limit in the standard. And as long as it's not a public interest entity, you could be a billion-pound revenue company. And as long as you are not a public interest entity, you could be validly claiming to apply the IFRS for SMEs. And I think, maybe we want to ask that size question, under the heading of who, with PIEs as the first part and then size. And then the second question is alignment. And if we say, here are the things we have to decide, this is what we think is, the strategy and the use. Here's one example of what it would mean to go through, remind you that when we do simplifications, we do a lot of them, and, here maybe is leases and what it looks like. But we want to agree with you what direction we're doing before we go through and look at four major new standards, a new conceptual framework, and 50 significant amendments to existing standards as candidates for this update. And because I think not only is it a lot of work on our part, on our stakeholders' part, to evaluate those, it also risks drowning out the central strategic decision of who is this for, and, is it alignment or responsiveness to identified problems? And then two further things. I think when we talk about responsiveness to problems and, the application of the standards, I think we do have to be focusing, as some have said, I think Sue and Amaro in particular, on the users of financial statements prepared using the standards, because I think from what we've heard so far, most of the feedback we've gotten about things we should do has been about those who are preparing using the standard to prepare financial statements. This is a question we have. How do you do this? What should we do in this circumstance? And I think we have to be thinking about the users of financial statements in terms of determining whether there's a need to update and how we prioritize that. So I think we have to go out and get evidence about that, especially if we're doing a responding to needs, focus. So overall, I think we should do an RFI, but I think we should do a high level, let's decide the direction and bring stakeholders along. I think we should form a view, but I think we should bring stakeholders along before we make a major investment and ask them to make a major investment in understanding what the implications are. And I think we maybe should take a one-off approach to saying, normally, if we were going the alignment route, normally we'd incorporate all these major new standards. here are the pros and cons of doing that. Maybe we have to focus on a few. But if we say we're not doing PARFISU financial instruments, you know, this time, that doesn't mean we're never going to do it. We might just do, you know, do it later. Because I think the other point that's made in, I think, paper A or C is by the time any revision is effective, there'll be more experience with the new standards that people can draw on and applying the SME standard. But I think we need some of that greater experience with applying the standards to make the decision about what the simplifications are and where we should give relief and not. And the few years down the line will help the preparers, but it won't help us in making those decisions. So I'd go for a high level.
Svaza wanted to say, so I give her the floor now, since she can be very brief.
I'll try to be brief, but it's going to be worded differently, if I may. So to the question whether I agree with the staff recommendation, I think I would say, and I'm closer to agreeing to it than rejecting it. But it would take a number of precisions, clarifications, and rewording to have my agreement. So what I agree with is that the fact that there is a change in IFRS can trigger the consideration of whether there should be a change in the IFRS for SMEs. And that's what makes me very close to where you are leading us. But it's a consideration. And when you say must should be aligned, it seems that you already presume of the outcome of your analysis, whereas I would like this analysis to be undertaken openly. The second point is in the first element in the analysis that I would introduce is to consider the current guidance in the IFRS for SMEs today and see whether it is already broadly aligned with IFRS as revised or not. And this for different reasons. First of all, when the IFRS for SMEs was issued, it was based on existing IFRS, but with also some differences that were in some way anticipating changes that were coming, developing in IFRSs. So you may have a number of sections. Financial instruments is one, consolidation is another, that have already included in the IFRS for SMEs changes that have been inserted into IFRS at a later stage. And so the broadly alignment assessment for a large standard is, to me, an element of scrutiny that is essential before getting into the full analysis. When it relates to small amendments or interpretations, in my view, that scrutiny should be done in a different manner, but it is the interpretation or the amendment addressing a level of guidance that is in the FFSMEs because it's been simplified, non-existent. So we don't need to analyze and reach conclusion there, not go further, if that is, in fact, modifying a level of detail that is non-existing. And that's a first scrutiny that I don't see in your analysis. Then when you, and I agree with the principles that you propose, but in the analysis on relevance, exactly as Hugh has indicated, I would want to see an assessment of what is the practice today of the related section of the requirements in the IFRS for SMEs. And I think Sue has illustrated that very well, so I'm not going to repeat it, but it's exactly what I have in mind. We've started our reasoning, for example, on IFRS 16 leases on the observation of how things were done. We need to do that also and not presume that it is necessarily exactly in the same state as it was for listed entities. Then Darrell mentioned the cost-benefit analysis. I would add to that cost-benefit analysis a notion of ability because you may have very acute business entities in their field and there may be because they don't have the need of sophisticated financial communication to external users, they may be very lightly equipped from a financial reporting perspective. And so when you have notions that rely on a lot of judgment, there may be an ability element in the... I'm not suggesting that there should not be any, but where the level of judgment is very high, I guess it could be also a criterion for not going into that direction at the level of the... of the IFRS for SMEs. Now, I agree with all the benefits that you've listed, which are the benefits from that come from alignment. And I think these benefits justify the fact that we consider that a change in IFRS might bring benefits to users and practitioners in the IFRS for SMEs context. And I don't think they should play a role again in the analysis on relevance benefits that we make, because you know, I was struck in the IFRS 16 paper by the fact that the you know, you report, if I understood well, on the reasons given by those in the SME implementation group that supported incorporating changing IFRS for SMEs to reflect IFRS 16. And I was struck by the fact that in the three arguments that were given, the word lease is absent.
The word what?
Lease. The word lease is absent. Lease. So it's because sharing the same principles is effect. I mean, as all the benefits have been identified, it's because it's a big standard. And the third one is because it brings comparability between the world of SMEs and the world of listed entities in competing for funding. So, I mean, these three arguments, when you consider every pervasive standard, are going to be met without even looking at what we're talking about. So I think we must absolutely stay away from arguments that would verify every time you align. Because we should consider the subject that is being considered. And I don't think I have... Yeah, in this notion of ability, it's also because I think if you impose requirements that rely on a lot of judgment and you don't have the entity properly equipped, I think it also raises a question of faithful representation. Because if the standard is misapplied, you're not going to reflect what should be reflecting. And I've not been short, but I've phrased what I had in mind.
So, would it help if I responded to Francois' shopping list? So, I think in the analysis of relevance that you raise, I think we would try to be specific and not use those generic arguments that some of the SMIG members have kind of talked about, just that, the issues. And I think ability is a key point, and I think we could easily bring that in when we look around, not maybe the relevance, but simplification and certainly the application of judgment. In terms of an open analysis, we would, of course, bring the papers to the board, and it would be for the board to ensure an analysis was open. And this, as Matt said, is the first phase of the review. So if our analysis isn't open, we would obviously be being the request for information for you to approve. So I think our process would drive us to make sure we've been fair and balanced as a staff team. We would, of course, consider whether the IFRS for SMEs is already aligned, and what Yusuf does in his paper is start the structure of the paper by looking what's currently in what's in the new IFRS, what's currently in the IFRS for SMEs. So that would be our first step. There might be instances where we think, well, it's pretty much aligned, but we could do some tidying up here that we would bring for the board to discuss. in terms of the smaller amendments, we've already started looking at those and screening them out either at a relevant stage or they're too detailed or this is something that's just not going to be practical to that group. So we were having a view that we would have a list of all the amendments and kind of screen out the ones at a first stage that we would bring to the board to discuss with you. I think that's all of the comments. I don't think there's anything on your shopping list that we couldn't and we wouldn't try to bring within the papers that we bring to the board if the board decides to propose with the alignment principles. And I think they're all very fair and good comments.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. And from the discussion we have had, I suspected that indeed we were in agreement. But I think it doesn't show in this paper. So if this paper is the basis for writing the request for views, I think we should make all these elements that you say are part of the approach that you're going to present apparent. Because initially I was against. It's only because we discussed that I ended up feeling that we were on the same path, but I couldn't read it from the paper. So a number of words have to be changed, and a number of other steps, I mean, that we've discussed should be reflected as being part of the approach.
So we could, if the board starts to think, we could bring a summary of the project decisions to the next board meeting and make sure that the analysis and the alignment principles are properly and detailedly documented for you.
Sue?
Reflecting on a few comments that people have made, I think one of the things that we need to be careful of as an organisation is if we're at the view one end of the spectrum, that we don't forget that we need to bring people along with us. And I'm not suggesting that's what the staff is intending, but I think we need to keep it in mind. And I don't know whether we need to sort of do it in preparation for the request for information or whether we should be doing it as part of the request for information. But if you think about IFRS 16, it was a relatively well-received standard given, you know, the build-up prior to its publication. It's been quite well accepted. And I think the reason why is because we put so much time and effort into explaining why it was an appropriate standard, what the benefits were, etc. And people saw that we took seriously their concerns. And I think the challenge we'll have is the SME community so far hasn't been part of that conversation. So somehow I think we need to be doing, asking for feedback and getting analysis and showing that we've thought through what their particular cost-benefit scenarios are so that we can bring them along with us as well.
I completely agree with that. And that's one of the reasons that I felt that we needed to have these principles because I know I take Hans's point as being fair and... But without a structure to the way we approach this, given the extraordinary number of standards that we need to analyse, I felt there was a need for us to have a structure and a kind of rigour.
I think I'm just reinforcing, I think we need to do quite a thorough analysis to support it because people aren't just going to... If you read the feedback that we got initially, I think a lot of people just don't want to have to do this. Yeah. And so we need to explain to them why we think it's important and we need to do a good job. I think the other thing we should try and do is to learn from our experience on in the big book with 9, 15 and 16. If you talk to corporates out there, we're not well loved at the moment. And we're not well loved at the moment because they've had to do a heck of a lot of work and because many of them feel that they were put through a transition process that was very burdensome and the outcomes were often very similar to where they started. So I think I'd learn two things from that. One is that when we think about transition for these guys, let's be really creative in terms of requiring less looking at old stuff and try and find ways to make it more prospective in nature. I don't mean prospective, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Less trawling through old documents and more thinking of the future. And also, we asked a really big thing of people to have to do three big things at once. So let's think creatively about that. Is it even if we want to update the book all at one time and we think that's the most efficient process for everybody so they can see it all at once, should we give them a really long time to implement it? And or should we think about whether we should give them the ability to choose to implement stuff at different dates? Some people might decide all at once is just easier, but some might want to do it one at a time. So let's try and be a bit creative in terms of what we've learnt from our big book experience and some of the practical aspects as well.
Errol?
You said Darryl and looked that way. So I think a couple of things. Firstly, I think Sue, you're absolutely right. I would agree with all of those. I think there's one extra element of that, which is some of the standards that we're looking at, and I think IFRS 16 in some ways is one of those. There's an easier way to get to the answer. So IFRS 16, we've already got finance leases in. We've got the guidance on finance leases. The words are there. When people apply those words, they get very much the same outcome as what they do if they were to, rather than having to actually write new words for the operating lease change, if you like. So those are one of the ways that we can think about better relying on people's existing systems and processes and the like. I think we should also be looking quite constructively at things like whether, for example, IFRS 15, you do get the same a very similar outcome, and whether, therefore, even though the words have changed quite a lot in the big book, it's justified in the small book. So I think a lot of that is the ways we can think about easing the process. I initially put my name up because I wanted to talk a little bit about Mary's suggestion on this extra step, and I must be honest, I'm reluctant to go down that route. And I'm reluctant to go down that route because I think what we end up doing is adding a whole year to the process in terms of the 180-day comment period and the process we'd have to go anyway to prepare it and the comment letter analysis and all of those sorts of things. And I'm not sure, given that I think staff at the moment are planning to get us through the process to an RFI by September, adding a whole year to the process is really all that useful. And I think a lot of the feedback we are getting from the mechanisms we already have in place is that this idea of call it soft alignment, for lack of a better term, is the right way to go. So what you may be looking at, rather, I think, is to more aggressively reach out to perhaps the SMEG and others who have participated in our process and see if they can give us something, but rather than going through their comment period. I think it's just because I'm not excited about adding a year to the process.
Thank you. It is quite difficult to answer the question made by the staff because I think we need both view one and the view two. And the view one and the view two have completely different needs. View one is the kind of simplified IFRS, which is used as a stepstone IFRS, which should be almost equal to the IFRS with the brand name of IFRS. But the other one, View 2, View 2 is the completely different accounting standard. And actually, 10 years ago, when we created IFRS for SME, we can satisfy both needs. However, as the time goes by, it gets difficult to satisfy both needs at once because there would be lots of backlog. And we provided a stable platform, but if the stable platform gets longer, then there is a huge cliff effect between the old IFRS for SME and the revised IFRS for SME. And such kind of process mechanism wouldn't work long. So it worked once, but still it was difficult. Now it's second time. It's much more difficult. So I think it is high time to think about structure. And I think we need three standards. One is full IFRS. The other is simplified IFRS, which we need to catch up as soon as we issue the full IFRS. Say, for example, once we issued IFRS 17, we can provide some simplified IFRS 17 before we forget about the discussion of IFRS 17. So then we wouldn't have a big backlog issue. And as for the current IFRS for SME, I think it is well received in lots of countries. And for those countries, especially developing countries, they use it part of their economic infrastructure because they didn't have their own accounting standard. And their own accounting standard cannot be understood by foreign investors. So therefore, incorporating IFRS for SME really contributed to their economy. And then they much appreciated. And that is one of the reasons why IFRS is supposed to be very successful. It is applied to 140 nations. But among 140 nations, many entities just simply apply IFRS for SME mainly. So therefore, I think there is a decent needs for the such kind of stable, robust, understandable standards. So we could brand slightly differently. So we can say it's an accounting standard for SME issued by ISB. So we can disconnect the from IFRS. So if we could provide in such a way, we don't have to do the review once in 5 years or something. So that is what I propose.
Martin?
I mean, I think it is very difficult to say, okay, we prefer view A or view B, because I agree with Tuck, because if I would think about a company applying this SME standard sitting in a country which uses first time our standards and not has an own standard, and with a company which has only maybe 50 people and in turnover, I don't know, revenues of something, I would really prefer view B, which is not doing so quite often. If I Well, Mary said, we recognize now that we have companies applying this standard, which is a billion revenue company. And then your point is a branding problem, because it is not an SME, and they're using our standard. And if I thinking about this company, yeah, maybe I would more lean to view A, doing it, and as Tuck said, immediately after we have done that. And therefore, I think also when we would do view A, I don't know how to judge simplification, because if I then thinking about a company which I thought was just 100 people or a $1 billion revenue company, I think is quite different for me. And when I had experience in go back to Germany, there is always threshold. If you have such kind of employees, such kind of revenue balance sheet total, then you apply that standard. If it is below that standard, if it is below that standard, we don't have that. But we try now to update something which I don't know who is using that exactly. And that makes me difficult. And when I saw, when we had this first discussion about that, this, I don't know, 2.5-3 pages of what we have done since we have done the last update, it was, I don't know, 20, 25 issues. And to throw all that into a really SME, I would view we should not do that. If I think we should, or if people asking me to do it with companies which are big companies, yes, we should. And therefore, I thought, okay, what we should first do to get more input, because that was my request last time, to say, okay, in this request for few, I have to understand more, because before I can make a tentative decision which few we should follow. That was only my point last time, because maybe others can do this judgment, I can't, because I we also kind of big difference, also what we should, in this example for leases, I would have a difference if there is one guy working in a finance department has to do all this kind of leasing stuff. I would say that this cost benefit is different if I talk a kind of big company which is not public, but maybe have 100 people working in bookkeeping and can do all this work. So what I want to say, I think it's one of the problems which we're discussing is because we don't have guidance what kind of company should apply our standard for SMEs. That causes or the reason is the result of this problem. And before, maybe we don't want to decide it, I think we need more input. Otherwise, I feel difficult to make decisions on that.
Okay. Tom?
I want to thank the staff for doing a super job in a difficult topic that has a built-in conundrum. So I think one of the first things that you guys did was you did follow what was laid out historically, was that the expectation was that we would align. And like you said in the preface to the IFRS for SMEs, it's based on full IFRS with modifications, not full IFRS circa 2009 with modifications. But in some sense, as Sue said, the start version of 2 is IFRS circa 2009 with modifications, because we didn't go to the clean sheet. We did that. So the first thing I want to say was I really found, and the big issue of this is this whole problem of the amount of things that would have to be incorporated and all that. But I did want to really congratulate you. I found 30B was a really good explanation of how you would apply the principles. And it also, I thought, was a good explanation of how to apply those principles well. So if we decide to align, 30B is a great guide. But we may not decide to align. And I kind of agree with Mary that we've got this sort of conundrum in the background. And I think the conundrum goes to the fact that in maximizing the period of stability, we also maximize the amount of change if you want to do it all at once. And it's kind of like damming a river. The longer you keep it dammed when you open the gates, the bigger the rush. And so we now will have a deluge of really big revenue, lease, lots of stuff, probably more than that constituency can absorb. So you've got this catch-22 to what we're going to do. If we align, we're going to deluge them, and drown them. And so one option would be to maybe just do a subset of the standards. But then you'll get the problem that you highlighted. If you don't align over time, you'll have these two really disparate things. And if you do a subset every time, it'll just take you longer to get there. So I could sort of see that you've got this conundrum. With all that said, I think I'm kind of sympathetic to being with Mary, and maybe what Sue said is, and what Tack said, is how, if we really want to align, which I think we do, is how do we manage the deluge? How do we stretch these things out? And notice, if we stretch them out, we're going to go to what Tack said. Tack said, let's do it each time something comes up, let's put it in. Well, if we take it all at once, but then give them 6 years, we might as well have done it the same thing.
Reminding ourselves that we are hoping that the next couple of years will be a relative period of calm. Yeah.
And that would bias...
The dam will not be needed to make higher and higher, so we can...
So we may catch up.
...the light at the end of the tunnel.
So, yeah, so
mixing your metaphors.
So I'm actually sympathetic, and when you get to see, you actually suggest some of that, splitting it in two and when they come in. So I think that's one way to manage the deluge. So I think kind of on balance, I'm in favor of what you said. In particular, I think paragraph 25, where you highlight the inefficiencies in audit, preparation, education. The farther those things depart, the more costs you impose in society from learning two systems. And that's always in the background, but you don't get that in the immediate feedback from a preparer. So I think I agree with what you're doing, as long as we can manage the deluge properly. And I think we have to spend a lot of time. That's where I like Mary talking about an inflection point. If we are deciding alignment, but we have to manage a deluge, then we need to learn how to do it. And like Tack had some ideas, I think, and that's even one we can look at a bit, because there's almost two markets, the little tiny people who want it not to change at all, and the people who want a path to full IFRS who probably want it kept up. And I think that's a little bit like what Tack said. So anyway.
Bonsoir, and
well, thank you. I write my name Tack because I must say I get nervous when we start discussing size of the entities, the size. It's called the IFRS for SMEs, but we know that the scope is defined differently. And I would consider it a wrong direction if we started having the size in consideration. And this for different reasons. The first thing is that under my former European responsibilities, there was some pressure about having different requirements for listed SMEs. Every time we went to users on the subject, the response was first unanimous, which is not always the case, and second, what they were saying is that the smaller the entity, the more reliance there is on financial statements because there is scarcity in other sources of information. So in other words, moving away SMEs from providing good information to markets would in fact be an obstacle to them for them and not a help in reaching financial markets. So that's the first point I would like to remind. And second, in the way we think about eventually divergences, other than making it simpler, I think, for example, we've illustrated that in our business combination and the common control project, that when we consider the needs of lenders separately from the needs of investors, we may reach different conclusions in terms of what the information needs are. And that's a clear delineation in our reasoning. And making this an IFRS document, because it has this underlying logic, reasoning, consideration of users as a basis. And I think that's what justifies the brand. What justifies the brand, in my view, is this, and not necessarily that it is totally aligned. It is, in itself, a different standard. That doesn't mean that it should be as different as possible. And as I said earlier, I agree that a change in IFRS triggers the consideration of whether. But it's not a preconceived conclusion.
I support us working on alignment, and I think we've heard some good suggestions today how to move that forward, particularly the detail of thoughtful things that Françoise has suggested, which Michelle says are things she can, team can take on, coupled with idea comments on timing, and particularly we've had suggestions around timing. Tom's calling it a deluge, and Sue talked about trying to be innovative in how we do it, and I think we have got some good learnings from full IFRS and the big adoption. I would be reluctant to ask for the high-level question. I would be reluctant because if you ask people, do you want to do all this work, usually people tell you they don't want to do work. So I'm more in favour in the RFI of being able to propose, give ideas of how we see it working and how we would propose to do it. Martin's concern about size. I think a lot about who uses the standard. Like, it's hard for us to know this universe, this population of who uses, but that's a country-level regulator decision, and it's the responsibility of the regulators to work out who they are comfortable in their jurisdiction using.
But sorry to interrupt, Anne, but we know geographically where it's being used, yeah. And it's mostly in countries where SMEs truly are. SMEs.
Okay, so...
with the exception of UK.
Yeah, okay, point taken. It's just come into the discussion, some people feeling that there's a big spread in who uses it, but they maybe are the outliers.
Seems to me.
Okay. And then finally, tax three levels, that's engendered a bit of interest. I think if there's any further discussion on three levels, we also have to remember we have another project, which is about having full recognition and measurement and reduced disclosure. Mm. So that would be four levels. Oh. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Well, yeah. I think I sense at least strong support in principle for alignment, but with a really open eye for... Mm. all the difficulties that might entail, the enormous quantity of possible changes, and then a lot depends on what is the final picture that we can give them, including transition arrangements, including simplification. We really have to have a total idea of how much they can stomach.
Yeah, so I think what we've heard is the principles need to be seen as hurdles as much as anything else in terms of when we apply, and there does seem to be a view that the board is closer to view one. I take away the point about the deluge, and I think that is something maybe we should address in the RFI, whether we can create, if we have the RFI that is comprehensive in terms of all of the amendments, but then we ask about, or we give different, you know, we could do this group or we could do that group, and we ask for input on that, that might be a way of addressing the deluge.
Yeah, but I don't know where you are at this point, but I think there's little value in just, like Anne also warned, ask them the broad question, how much do you want to change? I think we should give them a more or less a concrete picture of what we think could be in the game.
Yeah, we think it's important that the RFI is strategic, but it's specific, which was the term that Mary used at the last board meeting, in that if we really want input from this group, they need to be very clear about what we could propose in an or what the board could propose in an exposure draft.
Just in thinking about this deluge thing, I think it is probably going to be quite important for us to have at least thought through the recent standards before we decide whether or not there is and to what extent there's a deluge. So we're thinking about 15 and 16 and 9 and all these big standards, but actually we could well conclude that on, say, 9 and 15, they're very limited changes, and or on 16, there's one specific change, or we might decide that actually we don't believe that's relevant. So I think we need to be careful about assuming that because it is big in IFRS, it is going to be big in IFRS for SMEs. Mm-hmm. So I would say at the very least, I think it would be useful for us to have thought about those standards and decided whether, in fact, they do constitute a deluge once we've looked at them in the IFRS for SME type space.
I'd agree with that. And also, Francois mentioned before that 9 is a pretty close cousin to SMEs because the SPPI test was built from SMEs. So, yeah. I agree with what you said, and also that we need to put alternatives in, but also I think one of the benefits as well of doing the sort of work that Daryl was mentioning there is that it helps us position it as well, because the more we can explain that, you know, it sounds like a big change, but come on, let's think carefully through this so that it's a bit more measured. We start to, you know, get people used to the idea, but also not just asking them whether they think it should be combinations of these standards and that standards, but also if we conclude that it's appropriate to make amendments to reflect, for argument's sake, all of 9, 15 and 16 in some simplified version, then getting feedback on, we know this is quite a lot of change in this book still, if we were to give you this long implementation time, or if you were to have alternatives of when to adopt, you know, so are some of these ideas helpful ideas, as opposed to just playing with what the package of changes is? I think that would be useful as well.
Does this discussion give you enough information on how to proceed with the way forward, or do we...
So to my mind, it seems like we will be working along as the staff had proposed, enhanced with the comments that the board members has made, and specifically those of Francois. And then it seems that the general view is that we would still work towards the one RFI, maybe expanded a bit for the comments that Sue has just made.
Can we support this?
12.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Well done.